You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. We're taking a break over the next few weeks, so we're going to play you some of our favourite stories over the summertime. We'll be back with brand new episodes in February.
Hi, I'm Erin, and I'm a supervising producer for All the Best. This story is by Danny Stewart, and it's about her allergies acting up on a trip to India. After listening to this story, I'm really grateful that I don't have any allergies. My mum has allergies, quite severe allergies, and only developed these later in adult life. So, you know, maybe one day I will be an honorary member of the club. Anyway, hope that day is far away, but until then, here it is, Allergies by Danny Stewart.
They say it's the people you love who can hurt you the most. Well, you could also say when you live with life-threatening allergies, it's the food you love that hurts you the most. When I was studying abroad in India, one of my favourite foods almost killed me. Dal is one of my favourite dishes, a heavenly blend of lentils, onion, garlic, paprika, turmeric, and ginger. On the day the university organised for us to go to the Taj Mahal, dal almost killed me. We had a fancy lunch beforehand. Hey, do you reckon that has nuts in it?
I don't know. Maybe you should check.
It's probably fine. It just looks like dal.
An hour after lunch, we were at the Taj Mahal. We went through security, then we walked through the archway. And there it was, a monumental mausoleum made of white marble. It looks completely white in photos, but close up, it's actually a mosaic of bright gemstones. It was an extraordinary scene, but I was starting to feel not all that extraordinary. I felt hot and tingly and kind of itchy. Maybe I'd gotten bitten by some bugs. Maybe I was just so overwhelmed by the beauty of the Taj Mahal, my excitement was manifesting physically. Then the cramp started. I'd never had an allergic reaction this severe, so I had no idea what was going on. I went to the bathroom because, well, I thought it could be Delhi Belly. There was a huge line of tourists, but I just pushed to the front.
Sorry, can I get through? Excuse me.
This was an emergency. Finally, I reached the toilet, but nothing. I went to wash my hands and looked up at the mirror. My face was so swollen, my eyes were reduced to slits. I suddenly had the lips people pay thousands of dollars for and some not-so-hot hives. I found my way back to the group and told the professor that my immune system seemed to be confused and was attacking itself. He looked very concerned.
It was suddenly hard to stand. My knees buckled. I leaned against a fire hydrant and propped myself up. Didn't want to believe that delicious curry had done this to me. The professor called over another student with allergies. She took one look at my face and said I was going into anaphylaxis and needed my EpiPen. So naturally, everyone asked,
Where's your EpiPen?
I left it on the bus. But guys, it's not that bad. I just need to have a rest. I'm so fine. When I was at school, my photo was in the staff room. Next to my photo was a chart of the stages of an allergic reaction. It went from mild to severe.
As I sat there in the gutter next to the Taj Mahal, I started checking off each stage in my head.
Itchy mouth, throat and lips.
Check.
Hives. Swelling of lips, eyes and face.
Check.
Abdominal cramps.
Check.
Limpless.
Check.
Weakness.
Check.
And confusion.
Check. Wait, what?
Uh-oh.
I'd never had symptoms this far down the chart before. I thought maybe I should just accept my fate at this point. The Taj Mahal is a pretty nice place to die. It's very peaceful. What happened next is kind of a blur. The cramping was so bad, it was hard to walk. I remember a whole lot of yelling and pointing at my swollen face. One of the university staff rushed my classmate and I into a rickshaw. We somehow got back to the bus.
Okay, where's your bag? You need your EpiPen.
I was still breathing well enough, so I didn't want to use my EpiPen. When I was a kid, I was taught how to use an EpiPen on an orange. I have never had to use it on myself, but I remember the long, thick needle, and I was scared. If you use it, you need to go to hospital, and I didn't want to do that. I wasn't sure if my insurance covered anaphylaxis. So I took some antihistamine instead.
About 10 minutes later, my symptoms settled. I went back to the Taj Mahal and met up with my classmates.
Haha, guys, remember 10 minutes ago when we thought I was dying?
That was really scary. Not funny.
I felt pretty bad about causing so much medical melodrama, but everyone forgot about it pretty quickly.
On the bus ride back, we discovered that I wasn't the only victim of that fancy restaurant. The chosen ones had deli belly, and they spent the night hooked up to a drip. I'm extremely lucky that my allergic reaction stopped just short of my throat swelling, and I lived to see another day. Allergies can make for some great stories to tell at parties, but they can be some serious stuff. Allergies, allergies, something's living on my skin. Doctor, please, open up, it's me
Allergies. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. We're taking a break over the next few weeks, so we're going to play you some of our favourite stories over the summertime. We'll be back with brand new episodes in February.
Hey, this is Ryan. I'm the EP. The story I've chosen this week is by Sydney Shaw with sound design by Alina Godwin. What I really like about the story is that the writing is just great. It flows really well. It's super funny. This is kind of a reflection on love and heartbreak. And so there's a lot of turbulent emotions, but it's kind of the story is told with like emotional distance and sarcasm and irony. So while it is a very sincere story, it's not super depressing. It's fun. The sound design is really great. It's got original music by Alina as well. And I think Alina is really good at knowing just how to enhance the emotion of a scene in the right way without making it too cheesy, which is a difficult thing to balance sometimes, but I think Alina really nails it here. So I hope you enjoy the story.
It was September 2018, and I had found myself on the receiving end of inexplicable heartbreak. I was boarding my second flight for the day from LA to Melbourne, eventually to arrive home in Australia, alone. I had been heading to New York only 10 days prior with my very recently turned ex-boyfriend. The same instructional safety video that played on the flight over starts as I nestle into my American Airlines flight.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for your attention. It's time to get you ready for takeoff.
The gorgeous model on the tiny airplane screen alerts me to where the emergency exits are and thanks me for choosing American Airlines.
Thanks for choosing American. We're happy to be your airline.
You're most welcome, I say, reaching over for my plastic cup of Pinot Noir. The air hostess furrows her brow at me as if to say, I'm supposed to say that. I smile nervously and dig around for the Xanax I smuggled onto the plane in a box of tampons. 2 hours into my 16-hour flight, I wake up in a daze and immediately freak out. The plane emoticon has only moved slightly toward my destination. Xanax, you have failed me! Agitated, I dig around my tampon box for the second time and pull out a lorazepam, my last resort. I order another Pinot Noir and watch The Wolf of Wall Street until consciousness slowly slips away. There's a scene in The Wolf of Wall Street where Jordan Belfort gets so fucked up on Quaaludes, the ensuing scene he causes results in being strapped to his seat.
I can't even tell you why. Why?
The scene I caused wasn't nearly as dramatic, and the drugs in my system nowhere near as potent. But as the Xanax and lorazepam had a tea party in my central nervous system, although I was out like a light, I saw shadows that were moving rapidly toward me. I used my arms and legs to protect myself. Each time the large older man sitting to my left attempted to subdue me, in my head I thought it was my ex-boyfriend, and all I wanted to do was hold him. I attempted to do so not once but three times. As the sun seeped into the windows and the air hostesses began handing out breakfasts of granola and fruit instead of airplane-quality red wine, I was just as mortified as Leonardo DiCaprio playing drug-fueled sex maniac Jordan Belfort. I'm terribly sorry, I explained to the large older man. I'm going through a bit of a rough time. That's okay, he replied. I'm from Chicago. My wife and I are going to Fiji. But I was back in Melbourne now, single for the first time in nearly half a decade, inexplicably heartbroken and living on the couches of those who were kind enough to deal with me. My antidepressants made it hard to cry and made the insides of my feet feel warm. Between countless "you okay?" messages spilling into my phone and spam emails for funeral insurance that sounded strangely personal, I needed something to direct my volatile energy towards. At first, that something was drinking. Working at a bar meant whatever alcohol I wanted, at whatever quantity I thought was necessary, was at my fingertips. As many as 20 shots of whiskey or vodka or tequila, or a likely combination of all three, could be consumed in one shift. The after-shift drinking was a lot more rapid. Double parked with a shot of Jameson and a pint of beer, my psyche would erupt all over my workplace. There was something so inorganic about the concept of dating apps that almost deterred me from downloading Tinder. I used it for about 5 minutes 5 years earlier and uninstalled it promptly after coming across my friend's stepbrother's profile. His bio read, "How much does a polar bear weigh?" Enough to break the ice. Tinder 5 years later is everything I imagined it to be. I come across countless people I know by face but not name who are regulars at work, and the next time they come in I feel weird about it for no reason. Travel dude. Looks out over a mountain. Looking for a travel buddy, he writes, plus all the countries he has visited in emojis. Shirtless dude covered in traditional tattoos. Will write the same Bukowski quote. Some people never go crazy. What horrible lives they must lead. 35-year-old dude still using dating apps for obvious reasons. Will write, you use filters because of your insecurities. 15 people whose picture is them naked in public from the rear. 15 people named Dimitri. There's a lot of people named Dimitri on Tinder, I say to my friend Kale. A lot of Dimitris need dates, he replies, and who are you to stand in their way? During one of my swiping escapades, I pause on somebody. Austin. He looks like the type of person I would look twice at on the street while praying they don't sense my yearning. Tall, well-dressed, and the type of person who you just know reads for fun. His bio reads,
"Want to talk about Nicolas Cage for, like, 2 hours?"
We match, and my dopamine levels skyrocket. After a very courteous back and forth, we arranged to meet at the Tote on a Saturday night in early November. I intentionally bought 2 tickets to a gig and pretended I had a spare. He accepts my invitation and even tells me in the afternoon leading up to it that he's excited. When I arrived at the Tote that evening, I was nervous enough to eat my entire fist. I half anticipated to meet someone much older than he said he was, or a few kids in a trench coat. But I'm relieved when I come face to face with all the reasons I invited him to begin with. He is handsome, wearing a denim jacket with a pin of Mr. Burns from The Simpsons shaking hands with Elvis, and taller than me even in heels. Yes! He tells me he's from Seattle.
Austin from Seattle.
I say, I'm Sydney from Perth! How much does a polar bear weigh? I think to nobody but myself. Enough to break the ice. We sit at the bar and he tells me about how the show Portlandia had a negative impact on Portland. I tell him about the time I made a severely bad first impression on Jello Biafra of the dead Kennedys. He does an extremely good impersonation of Donald Trump and tells me of his missed opportunity to throw something at him in America, and I tell him about how I accidentally smuggled a gram of cocaine back into Australia. We get an Uber back to my new apartment in Carlton after he gets too embarrassed to keep making out in front of several bartenders. But just when I'm about to try figure out which key it is to open my front gate, he stops.
You're probably a bit drunk. Are you sure you want to invite me up?
The fact that he was nice enough to make sure makes me want to sleep with him even more. Yes, absolutely. As I get to know Austin from Seattle, I send him half-naked and naked photos of myself. He tells me which of my knees is his favourite and acts repulsed by my left armpit. We make up stories of how we met.
I was riding a tandem bicycle alone and she jumped on.
He was my camp counsellor. My braces and acne made me stand out from across the mess hall.
We met at an orphanage. When I saw her, I knew I had to adopt her.
He was my high school geometry teacher. Long story short, he isn't allowed to teach anymore.
She's my cousin. But it's okay. We were born in different countries.
I am lost in everything. His piercing blue eyes, his wonderful smile, his strange demeanour and even stranger sense of humour. The insides of my feet didn't feel warm anymore, and I don't seem too fazed by targeted advertisements for online therapists.
So I'll go. But
sitting at a bar one evening, I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston comes on.
And I will always love.
I tell him about the time I forced my ex-boyfriend to slow dance with me while high on copious amounts of MDMA. I can't do this, my ex said defiantly, as Whitney belted out the undying devotion I wanted to feel at the time. Shut up, I said to him. Don't ruin this for me. Austin laughs.
If that were me, I'd say, it's been nice to meet you, Sydney, but I must go back to America. Right now. Before this song ends.
I laugh at the thought, but my heart irrationally sinks.
I'm just kidding. I'll slow dance with you anytime.
I smile and nestle myself under his arm to rest my head on his shoulder. I'm glad you're here.
Me too.
When my ex and I first kissed, we were sitting alone in a dirty cubby house out the back of my friend's share house in Elstonwick, where we would later go on to live together some years later. We were the last awake after everybody had gone to bed. He had come to comfort his friend, who I worked with at a record store in St. Kilda, after he went into one of his depressive spirals where he would brazenly mope around while forcing everyone to listen to Joy Division. Not the upbeat kind of Joy Division either. the Joy Division that makes you remember Ian Curtis killed himself. We were listening to Blink-182 and drinking heavily when he kissed me out of the blue. "You're so pretty," he kept saying as he stared intently into my drunken eyes. I swooned and stayed that way for the next 4 years of my life. But that relationship eventually collapsed on the muggy streets of New York. How could I trust my own instincts? Were they even mine? Austin from Seattle was in Australia on a working holiday visa. It was hard to tell whether I was falling in love or I was only allowing myself to get close to somebody who wasn't going to be around for much longer. I consider calling it off with him several times, but never actually get around to doing it. Instead, I introduce him to all my friends. We drink sparkling wine and watch B-movies every Sunday. We trade our fetishes.
The part of a tree where two branches meet makes me dizzy. If the bark even slightly resembles a vagina, I have to sit down.
It makes my head spin when you're sitting on a bus and you see other people miss the bus. Even more so the further they run when they're clearly not going to make it.
All people have to do is say moisture really slowly.
I whisper, moisture, into his ear several times as he pretends to erupt in ecstasy. Austin develops what appears to me more of an actual fetish for wearing my bathrobe. He beelines to it every time he enters my room and keeps it on while we have sweaty athletic sex. When he wakes up in my bed, he either tickles me, steamrolls me, or tries to lift me like a weight. You have to start with something smaller and work your way up to me, I tell him.
I've already done that.
The day after he told me he loved me, he gave me a bottle of Bombay Sapphire gin and 4 bottles of fancy tonic water. I told him I felt like crying. Most people cry when they're drinking gin. I cry when people give it to me. I try to give it back to him before he leaves my apartment.
It's not the gin I want to see.
My eyes feel slightly watery after he's gone, and I feel like I've been hit by a truck full of my own feelings. I pull out my phone to let him know I need some space after spending 5 minutes Googling synonyms for recentering.
You take as much time as you need,
he writes.
I completely understand.
Of course he does, I scream inside my own head. He's perfect! I silently urge him to go away so I won't have to deal with the emotional roller coaster inside, but the thought of him leaving makes me feel even more teary. A montage of different I love yous plays through my head. The first person I ever made out with when I was a teenager, drunkenly slurring it over the phone. The emotionally volatile punk guy I was sleeping with when I was 20. My former housemate who seemed incapable of interacting with women without thinking they were attracted to him. My ex-boyfriend and I saying it to each other, even as we both felt our good times as a couple coming to an end. Replaying the memories like this reduces the intense emotions involved to a hollow snapshot, like a Tinder profile, which is all Austin was to me at the beginning, a human advertisement in the superficial Tinder sphere. So why did this feel more real than anything that came before it? I write him another message, and after staring at the words on my screen for what feels like an eternity, I press send. I love you too. Here's where it ends, or where it starts. Austin and I hold each other close outside North Melbourne train station, shamelessly making out as busloads of people brush awkwardly by. I promise to send him cactuses in the mail, each one pricklier than the last and with various posties' blood, both fresh and dry, or maybe even some threatening mail with letters cut out from various magazines. I know about your robe fetish. He tells me he'll find the finest sparkling wine in all of New Zealand for my arrival in October, roughly 1 year since flying home from New York, alone and heartbroken. We swear to finish our own B-movie. 2 rogue sperm on the run from a copper IUD. Tomb womb. I tell him not to worry, that he'll probably find a Kiwi version of me.
I've met women from all over the world. There's absolutely nobody like you.
I smile, counteracting the feeling I've just swallowed a pile of rocks. I tell him I love him and I walk towards my train platform, though with a weirdo-shaped hole in my heart. and I treat myself to a well-earned cry on the train platform as several other commuters glance at me with a panicked look in their eye. I wave like an idiot until we are both out of sight. I think about downloading Tinder again briefly after our until next time, but with apologies to all the dateless Dimitris in Melbourne, I decide against it. I am Sydney from Perth in love with Austin from Seattle who lives in Wellington, and nothing could top that.
Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find all of our episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe. We'll be back with new episodes in February.